A Masterpiece of Corruption, written by Elsie Tyler and read by Chris Dyer.
Shoreham Beach, October 1651. It both deafens and soothes. The thunderclap as the pebbles are flung landward in a cloud of salt spray, then the long, hollow sucking back as the dark water rushes home. The sea has inched itself almost to the ragged line of bleached driftwood left by the last high tide. There is no point in delaying further, watching one foam-flecked wave follow another. Cromwell's troops are out there somewhere in the black circle of the Downs. The king does, however, delay further. It is still his right. His divine right, you might say. He is looking at some far point on the deserted beach, pale gold in the moonlight. He stands, wrapped tightly in his rough woolen cloak, on the last precious sliver of his kingdom.
"The boat, Your Majesty," says the taller and older of his two companions. A nervous man, it would seem, and made more nervous by having to repeat himself.
"A passage, at last. France. Safety. Would it please Your Majesty to embark?"
"Would it please me?"
The king cannot help laughing, even now. Laughter. He'll always be known for it, even during the many long, bleak years to come.
"It would be best to board now, sir," says the shorter of his companions.
He's young, little more than a boy, but he has the sort of aristocratic confidence that new money will never buy you. He's a baronet, having already inherited the title from a father who died contentedly in the old king's service. The young baronet would be willing to die in the new king's service if he had to, but preferably not tonight under this bright moon. They need to get the king into the boat before they are all spotted, dithering in a knot on the shoreline. Time, which was once so plentiful, has run out.
"It will be at least another hour until the tide is high enough," says the king.
"In an hour's time, Captain Tattersall may have sobered up," the young baronet points out. "He may then remember that Your Majesty has a price of £1,000 on his head. It would be more convenient if you and he were both on board when that happens. It would certainly be better that he should not remember it while still within shouting distance of some meddlesome officer of the Republic."
"Tattersall says he is loyal to the crown."
"The whole country was loyal to the crown once. Men's loyalties change nowadays, almost without their noticing. Tattersall is a greasy fellow and smells of fish, but for the moment he sincerely believes he is a royalist. He has a fine and noble role to play, if we can but keep him drunk. And there may yet be men in England whose support for you does not depend on strong ale. Once this night's work is complete, we begin the task of finding them and rallying them."
"You won't cross to France with me?"
"Wilmot will go with you. We two shall stay."
The king, for so he can call himself, having been crowned in Scotland at least, laughs again.
"Faith, that will be an uneven contest, Sir Michael. Cromwell's Ironsides on the one hand, and any sober cavaliers you can sweep up on the other. Parliament will outnumber you 100-1.
"They merely have the numbers. We have the cunning. There's more than one way to fight a war.